Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedorim Daf Samach Hey. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage, and then go to option 2. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins from the top line of Daf Samach Hey. On the side, you'll notice we've written in our marked Gemaras the topic heading we call the Nosei, which reads Hamuder Hanoa Mechaveroi, a person who had been prohibited from benefiting from his friend through a vow, Ein Matirin Loi Elo Befonov. When the vow is absolved, it must be done so in front of the subject of the vow. The Gemara now. Tanya, Hamuder Hanoa Mechaveroi. If A had vowed to prohibit B from benefiting from him, Ein matirin loi elo befonav. The vow cannot be undone unless B is present. Minohani mili. From where do we know that? Omar Rav Nachman dichtiv. The pasuk says with regard to Moshe Rabbeinu, we made reference to this topic in our previous shiur, where Moshe Rabbeinu, after escaping Egypt and going to Midian, which was the place in which he met his wife Zipporah, and ended up spending time there in the home of his father-in-law Yisro, Moshe Rabbeinu had vowed to Yisro that he is not going to leave him. So the time came, though, that the Almighty wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to return to Egypt for the purpose of leading the Jews out of bondage. And the pasuk says, "Vayomer Hashem el Moshe b'Midyon, lech shuv Mitzrayimo, ki mesu kolo anoshim." We spent time on this pasuk in our previous shiur, and you see here the Almighty says to Moshe in Midyon, and the reference to the place in which Moshe was located when the Almighty spoke to him leads us to the drasha, Omar Lo. The Almighty says to Moshe, "B'Midyon nadarto loch, v'ater nidorecho b'Midyon." In Midyon you had vowed, namely not to leave Yisro who lived in Midyon, and therefore it is there that you have to undo the vow. Dichtiv vayoel Moshe. This pasuk is understood to mean that Moshe had vowed to Yisro not to leave him. Ein ola ela shavua. And the word ola is a reference to an oath. Dichtiv. Here the Gemara cites two psukim that relate to the vow taken by Tzidkio, who was the last king of the Jewish people at the end of the first temple period. Tzidkio had vowed to the ruling power, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Bavel, that he, Tzidkio, would not rebel against him. So the pasuk that we read features that point. Vayove oisoi ba'ola, uksiv gam b'melech Nebuchadnezzar morad asher hishbioi belekim. The king, Tzidkio, who had been appointed by Nebuchadnezzar to rule in Israel at that time, that king, Tzidkio, rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, the very king unto whom he had sworn not to rebel. So what you can see in terms of the psukim, we've dashed underlined Vayove Oisei Ba'ola. The word Ba'ola is a reference to a vow. As you can see in the second citation, we dashed on the line, Hishbio. This is where he broke with the vow that he had accepted upon himself earlier, not to rebel. So you see from the use of the word Hishbio in place of the word Allah, that Ola is a reference to an oath, a vow or an oath. My Marduse, what was the story behind this idea of, or what say, what was the rebellion per se of Tzithio, which he had originally sworn not to do, not to rebel? So we have a long maisa, long marking, which gives you all of the background. Ashkeche Tzithio l'Nevuchadnetzar d'avikaochil arnevuchaya. Tzithio once chanced upon Nebuchadnezzar while he, Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian emperor, was eating a live arnava. Some translate arnava as a rabbit. So he was eating a live rabbit. Omar le, Nebuchadnezzar was, let's say, caught off guard doing this, okay, this despicable form of consumption. And Nebuchadnezzar said, Ishtabali de lo maglis ilovoi. I want you to swear to me that you're not going to reveal what you just saw and not say a word about it. Ishtabale. So Tzithio vowed to keep quiet. Lesof havakom mitzdayer Tzithiohu begufe. As time went on, Tzithio became very upset. He wanted in the worst way to reveal this behavior of Nebuchadnezzar. And Rashi says so that others would disparage him. Itchil Ashu Ose, Tzithio had absolved his vow. He approached the sages, the Omar, and he revealed the behavior of Nebuchadnezzar, his consumption of the live rabbit. Shoma Nebuchadnezzar dekomen vazin lei. Nebuchadnezzar then got wind, or got heard, that people were ridiculing him. Shalach ve'aisi Sanhedrin v'Tzithio. He sent for the high court, the Sanhedrin, and the king Tzithio. Omar Lahon, he said to them, Chazisun Maiko Ovid Tzithiohu, do you see what Tzithio had done to me, revealing what I did? Lav Hochi Have the Ishtaba Bishmo Dishmaya the Lo Maglis, is it not so? The sworn that he swore in the name of heaven that he would not reveal it. Omrule, so the Sanhedrin told, they told Nebuchadnezzar, it's true that he swore thusly. Itchilis Ashwasa, he absolved. He sought a reversal or a rescission of that oath. Amale Mitchilin Ashwasa. So Nebuchadnezzar asks, is that a possibility that one can be absolved of an oath? Amri lay in the Sanhedrin said, yes, that is a reality that that oaths can be absolved. Omar Luhu, so Nebuchadnezzar asks, Befonov o afilu shelo befonov, when an oath is reversed or is absolved, is it done so only in front of the subject of the vow, or even not in his presence? And of course, in this case, the subject of the vow was Nebuchadnezzar. Amri le befonov. So the Sanhedrin said, vows are reversed or absolved only in the presence of the subject. Omar lon ve'atun my avdisun my time alo amrisun le litzikiho. So you guys, you the Sanhedrin who absolved him of his vow, you did so not in my presence. So what are you doing? Why didn't you tell Tzithio that his vow cannot be absolved other than in my presence? They had no answer to that. Miad yeshvu la'aretz yidmu ziknei bas tzion. Immediately, they sat down on the ground and were silenced, the elders of Zion. Amar Rebbe Yitzchak melamed sheshamtu korim mitachtehem. In this act of sitting down on the ground, we learn that they removed the pillows or the cushions that they ordinarily sat on from under them, and hence sitting directly on the ground. A sign in other contexts we say it's a sign of mourning, but it's a sign that they were at a total loss. The Mishnah. Before we learn the Mishnah, we glance at the side. We have a nosei, a topic heading, combined with a structural note. In this Mishnah, you'll see that we used a triangle marking. These are dugmos. We're reading on the side. Dugmos shel devarim. Examples of things shel Rabbi Meir doimim le noilad. The einon be'emes noilad. Things that appear to be Nolad, a topic that we discussed in our previous shiur. Those types of vows whose absolution would be based on facts that were not present at the time of the initial vow. So we had seen a Tanaic controversy whether you can absolve vows based on nolad. So we will see here examples of things that appear to be like that, but they're not really nolad. And therefore, they can serve as the basis of absolution. The Chachomim will see disagree. So now the Mishnah. Rabbi Meir, Omer, Yesh Dvorim Shem Kenolad, V'Einon Kenolad. There are things that are like Nolad, but they're not really Nolad, and therefore you can use them as the basis of a vow absolution. V'Ein Chachomim Moidim Lo, but the Chachomim do not agree. Ketzad. How is this? Omar Kinum She'eni Noisei as Plonis She'avia Ra. He vows not to marry so-and-so because her father is wicked. Omru lo meis, oh, she'asa tshuva. Then people tell the vower that her father's dead. He died, or he repented. Kinum lebayezeh she'ani nichnas she'akelev ra besocho, of she'anor chosh besocho. I vow not to enter this house because there's a wicked dog in there. Or there's a serpent that is in there. Omru lo meis hakelevo shenerag anochosh. The people tell the vower the dog died or the snake was killed. Arei ein kinolad v'einon kinolad. They're like nolad, but they're not real nolad, and therefore they can be the basis of absolution, and v'ein chachomim modim lo, but the chachomim disagree. They don't acknowledge that as being the basis of absolution. The Gemara quotes the Mishnah Kinim Shani v'chule. We had seen that a person had vowed. Let us say not to enter a house or because of a bad dog, and then it was reported that the dog died. We had earlier in the Mishnah a person had vowed not to marry so-and-so because her father is wicked, and then he was told that, but he's dead. So the Gemara asks, Mace? No lad who? The case of someone dying, that is nolad. So how can the Mishnah say that it's like nolad, but it's not nolad? What bigger nolad is there than that? You made the vow, and at the time you made the vow, the fellow was alive. Later on, he died. So when you come to absolve the vow, it's based on the fact that he died, but that was not the reality at the time of the vow. So how is it that Rabbi Meir can say that it would work as the basis of a Pesach, a vow absolution? The Gemara answers, Omar Rav Huna, the first of a couple answers, Nase ketoile nidro bedovar. We take a look at the Rashi, Omar Rav Huna, Nase ketoile nidro bedovar, Berisha Sovia. The vow was made dependent on the wickedness of her father. Demashma, the initial vow actually implied the following: Kol zman shaviyah b'chayim, as long as he is alive, I am not marrying her. Devadai im omar she'eni nosei es plonis stam, if he had simply said, I'm not marrying her, vadai ki dekormis, then, as you said, that would be a case of nolad. However, Hashtud Yomar, here he added in his initial vow, She'avia Ra. That's what he said. He said that explicitly. Lefi Shehu Rasha Eino Nosi Esbito. Because of his wickedness, that's why he's not marrying the woman, the daughter. The Ahochi Poschin Lo Lomar Ilu hoyiso yodea shemes, had you known that he was dead, would you have made that vow? So this is different than a case of simple nolad. And as Rav Huna says, it's a vow which is dependent on a specific factor. And without that factor, so he would be very willing to go and marry her. Let us look at the Rosh commentary also, who seems to go along the same lines as the Rashi. We're looking at the Rosh at the end of the widest, the first of the widest lines. Nasi ketele nidro bedover acher, ki'ilu piresh, the vow is as if he spelled out by his saying, I'm not going to marry so-and-so because her father is wicked. It's as if he said, kol zman shoviyo kayom. As long, it's as if he said, my vow not to marry her is binding as long as he is alive. Hilkoch lo havi nolad. Therefore, it's not like some type of new circumstance. This is something that was spelled out at the beginning of the vow. Avol tnai gomur lo havi, to say it's an actual condition, which when not met, the vow wouldn't apply, that's not the case here. Hilkoch tzorcha Torah. Therefore, it is a vow and which needs absolution. We turn back to the Gemara. Rabbi Yochanan, notice number two, Rabbi Yochanan Omar, kvar meis, u kvar also tshuva ko amrino lei. The Mishnah, in fact, is describing a type of vow that's not, the absolution is not a function of nolad at all. When he made the vow, that man, the father of the girl, was already dead, or he had already repented. And that's why we can absolve him of the vow. At the time of the vow, those circumstances had already been there, and it's what is called a neder betois, a mistaken neder. The Gemara continues at the top of Omid Beis, Mosiv Rebbe Abba. Notice we have a long question, and we also note that the Tanaic source that's about to be quoted is a Mishnah from Daf Samach Vov Omid Aleph. In other words, on the next Omid, the following Mishnah appears. Kainim She'eni Noisei Ploinis, he vows not to marry so-and-so. Ke'ura, she's ugly. Varehi Noah, it turns out that she's attractive. Shchora, Varehi Lavona, he's not going to marry because of his disapproval of her black complexion, and it turns out she is not that. Ktsora Veharuka, he vows not to marry so-and-so thinking that she's of short stature, and it turns out that she is tall. Mutar Ba, he is allowed to marry her. Lo Mibnei Shikur Venasis, no Shkur Venasis, Levonic Sur Venasis Aruko, Elo Shaneder Tos. Not because the circumstances had changed, but rather from the outset, the appearance was not like he thought. That we call is a Neder Betos. That at the time of the Neder, the time that he vowed and stated his reasons for vowing, those reasons at the time of the vow were incorrect. Were, in other words, they were based on false facts, false information. Having this Mishnah, Daf Samach Vov, Bishlam Ola Rav Huna, things work out well according to Rav Huna's explanation of our Mishnah, the Yomar, Nase Ketoilu Nidro Bedavar, our Mishnah, where he vowed not to marry a woman because of her father being wicked. How is that not nolad? So Rav Huna explained, because he spelled out the reason for the vow at the outset. And as we saw in the Rashi, it's as if he had said, as long as he is alive. Which then it's clear that when he dies, So the vow is no longer binding. So that's the explanation of the Mishnah on Samach Hey Omen Aleph. According to Rav Huna, it's Nase Ketele Nidro Bedavar. So Tana, the Tana teaches Tele Nidro Bedavar. The Mishnah on Omen Aleph is explained with that explanation, V'tana Neder Tos. And the Mishnah on Samach Vav Aleph describes a different circumstance, namely, that at the time of the Neder, the facts were different than that which was perceived by the vower. Just to repeat, on Samach Hey Omen Aleph, the Mishnah where he vows not to marry so-and-so because her father is wicked, well, at the time he vows, her father really is wicked, according to Rav Huna. It's just that he spelled out enough at the time of the vow that when the circumstances change, it's as if that was built into the original vow. Hence, it's not a case of nolad. It's not a case of something brand new. That's Samach Hei Omen Aleph, and Samach Vav Omen Aleph speaks about a vow with erroneous circumstances in mind. Two types of, well, two different situations. Elo Rabbi Yochanan diomar kvar mei sufarsa tshuva. According to Rabbi Yochanan, who explained the Mishnah on Omed Aleph, on Samach Hei Omed Aleph, as that at the time of the vow, the circumstances were in fact different than what the vower thought. What do I need two Mishnayas to tell me the same principle? Namely, that at the time of the vow, the actual circumstances were different than that which the vower had thought. Kashya. This is a technical difficulty on Rabbi Yochanan's explanation of the Mishnah on Samach Hei Omer Aleph. V'oid Omar Rabbi Meir. Poischen loy min hakosuv shebetorah. The Ran comments. Poischen lo laadam b'ksu. That is, v'yonam Rabbi Meir poischen min hakosuv betorah. The afal gav the askinu perik arba nedorim. The Ran says, even though we concluded in the Perek of this Masechta, the Perek Arba Nedorim, the Lo Paschino B'yesh Boite Kimad Keres Cherev Kedishmul Damar Kol Anoyder Afapisha Mekaimo Nikur Rasha Uch Reb Nosan Damar Kol Anoyder Kilu Bona Poma. There are different types of Pesach that we do not use. They're overpowering type Pesachs where a person would be embarrassed to deny to deny having made the vow had he been aware of these things, when in fact he would have made the vow anyway, but he'd be too embarrassed to say thusly. So all of those cases, the hasam shiny, the havu yumim gedolim, those were big threats. The e afilu aldas hano nodar yisbayish lo makain. And if, as we just got finished explaining, that knowing those things, he would have vowed anyway, he would be too embarrassed to say thusly. As a result of that, this is a common theme that we've had in the last few dapim, where the absolution must be based on a case that the vower had the option of saying, I would have vowed anyway. But where he would be too embarrassed to say that, so the suggested Pesach is not going to be effective. Aval hani the money Tana hocha, the examples that our Tana gives over here, lo chamiri lin shikuli, are not, they're not so serious, they're not viewed in the eyes of the vower as major offenses, thereby leaving enough room for him to admit or to say that he would have made the vow anyway, and hence when he says, I would not have made the vow had I known these things, he is believed. So now what are the examples? We said in the Mishnah, Poischen lo b'mashikosu b'torah v'omrim lo ilu hoyiso yodeya. had you known she'ata oiver al lo sikom v'al lo sitar, by vowing against someone, which oftentimes comes as a result of that individual having wronged you, so now you're vowing to restrict him, that is a sin of vengeance and bearing a grudge. What else is involved in vowing? The prohibition of bearing hatred in your heart toward your fellow man. The ohavta l'recha kamocha, the obligation of showing affection and love to your fellow man. The cheochicho imoch, and the obligation of living in camaraderieship with your fellow man. Imagine the person from whom you restricted benefit might turn out to become impoverished, and you won't be able to help him because of your vow. So all of these things, all of these verses can be suggested to the person seeking absolution. Omar, if he responds and says, "Ilu ho'isi yodea shukain," had I known that my vow represents a violation of the points we just mentioned in the verses, "Lo yisi noder," I wouldn't have made the vow. Harei zemuter, that is an acceptable form of absolution. And we repeat, why is it acceptable? Because a person would not be embarrassed to say the opposite, namely, even having known these things, I would have made the vow anyway. Since a person would not be embarrassed to admit that, when he says, "This, had I known that I am in violation of these things, I wouldn't have vowed," we believe him, and hence it's muta, the vow is absolved. Omar lei Rav Huna bar Rav Katina l'Rabbanan. Rav Huna says, regarding the point mentioned in the Mishnah, where we tell the vower, as a result of your vow, the guy might find himself impoverished one day, and you won't be able to help him out because of your vow. So Rav Huna says to the Rabbanan, Neymar, why wouldn't someone say, "What do you mean, as a result of my vow, he's now going to be in trouble?" People who become impoverished, it's not my obligation to take care of them. That which I have an obligation to help people through communal charity, so he will get his help along with everyone else as through the charity that I give to the public coffers. The Ran, we look together in the Ran commentary, the lower part of the narrow lines, Kol ha-noifil ein-noifil li, let us back up, sorry, we have to look at the Ran a little earlier, in the middle of the narrow lines, V'leimo kol dima'ani lava lai-noifil, Hechi kotoni, how can the Mishnah teach the Poschen lo-shemo yani, that as a result of your vow, you realize that he might become poor, and you'll have to, and you won't be able to help him. The atiyochel afarnas, you won't be able to support him. V'kotoni lei behedya min akosav b'torah, and psukim that the psukim that the Mishnah cites indicate that you have to help him, and now as a result of your vow, you won't be able to do so. The Alma Mechayev Bachi, it shows us, the Mishnah is trying to show us that you are actually obligated to help this guy when he becomes impoverished. Well, Lei Molei, why can't the vower say, Kol Dimani Lavolai Nofel? Everyone who becomes impoverished isn't my obligation, Shani Mechuyev Lefarnase Levadi, that I alone have to support him. My Demoti Lefarnase Badi Kuli Alma Farnaste Lei, that which I'm obligated to help people is a communal obligation, along with everyone else, so I'll chip in. In such a case, where a member of the community becomes impoverished, and you had vowed not to benefit him, there's still no problem in that person getting the communal benefit. The person who took the vow isn't handing the money over to him. He's giving it to a public servant, the appointed one in charge of communal needs. The kevon shimrotza gabai litein lachirishus biyado. And since the gabai, if he should decide, this public officer, if he should decide to give the charity to someone else, he has the right to do that. Therefore, the madir is allowed to contribute to the public funds, and the mudar will be able to receive these public funds. We've had this before, that if A vowed not to benefit B, A can give the item to C, and C, if he wants to, can give it to B, and that's okay. That's the same thing here. When you give the charity, so you're giving it to a gabai tzedok, you're not giving it directly to the subject of the vow, and if the gabai tzedok gives it to him, it's okay. So the question then is, why does the Mishnah suggest that through the vow, one is then going to be, through the vow against a specific individual, how is the vower going to be in violation of these psukim in his inability to help so-and-so, suggesting that the vower is the one who otherwise is solely responsible for so-and-so's welfare? The Gemara answers, Omar le, ani omer, kol hanofel eino nofel lidei gabai tchila. When someone becomes impoverished, he doesn't immediately become the obligation of the public coffers, but rather he becomes the personal obligation of his family, of his relatives, of those that are near to him. We look in the Rashi, Ha lo motzi toin. The idea that we suggested before, that the vower should be able to respond, how am I going to be in violation of the psukim cited because I won't be able to help that guy? He can't say that. The chol hanofel banius, he who becomes impoverished, eino nofel lidei gabai tchila. He doesn't become the immediate obligation of the public officer. Elo kroivim misgaglin mo. Those that are near him, the relatives, his immediate relatives, they are the first ones obligated. So that when you vow not to benefit so and so, let us make the assumption, at least for in this context, that the vow is against someone that ordinarily, if would fall on hard times, it is your personal obligation to take care of him because he's your relative. The Mishnah, poischen l'adam b'ksubas ishto. If a person had vowed, let us say, to divorce his wife, Tosfos commentary, the lower part of the narrow lines, b'ksubas ishto, v'lo amrinon, and we don't say that one cannot use this as the basis of absolution because it's something that is as yet non-existent. There's a let's go on in the Mishnah. Umaisa be'echad shenodar ve'ishtoi hano. An incident involving someone that vowed not to benefit his wife. V'hoisuk suboso arba meis dinrim. And the ksuba that he would have to pay this woman as a result of vowing to divorce her would be a ksuba amounting to 400 dinar. Ubo lifnei Rabbi Akiva, v'chayvo litein lo ksubasa. The case came to Rabbi Akiva, and he said, listen, you're going to have to pay her that ksuba. Amar lo, the husband said, Rebbe, addressing Rabbi Akiva, he says, Shmeina meis dinrim haniach abba. My father left in his estate 800 dinar. Notal achi arba meis, vani arba meis. My brother took 400, and I took 400. Lo daya shetitalhi mosayim, vani mosayim. Is it not enough for her to receive simply 200, which is the standard ksuba payment, and leave me with 200? Amar lei Rabbi Akiva, Even if you have to sell the hair of your head, you have to pay her the ksuba, the full 400. Omar lo, ilu hoyisiyodea she'u kain, had I known that I would have to pay her the full ksuba that she was entitled to, lo hoyisi noider, I wouldn't have made the vow to divorce her. V'tira Rabbi Akiva. And Rabbi Akiva absolved him of the vow. The Gemara opens with a question that's based on, we'll say, prior knowledge, and that is the source of a woman's collecting of her ksuba is generally understood to be collection from land that the husband owns, not from portables that are in his possession. On the side of the Gemara, we have a Nosei topic heading, Ein Odom Niftar Mechoyve L'Ksubas Ishto Rak Beglal She'ein Lo Ka'es Ma Lechol. We will see in this Gemara that a person is not exempt from paying the ksuba owed to his wife. We didn't mention before, but maybe we're assuming that everyone knows, a ksuba is the financial obligation that a man accepts upon himself with regard to providing for his wife in the event that he divorces her. And of course, if he, the husband, dies, she collects a ksuba. So the Gemara asks, our Mishnah said that she would collect the 400 coins that this husband had inherited from his father. Metalteli mi mishtabdi l'ksuba? Are portables like coins? Are they bound to the payment of her ksuba? That's not true. Omar Abaye. Abaye explains that what this husband had inherited from his father wasn't 400 coins, but rather it was karkas shavah chesmei es dinar. Was a parcel of land, some total, or the total value of which was 800 dinar. The Gemara asks, "V'ha'katoni se'ar rosho v'se'ar rosho mitatalihu." Rabbi Akiva said, "As far as your obligation to pay the ksuba, even if it involves your selling the hair of your head and paying her with that, you'd have to do that. Now, the hair of one's head." Certainly, if it's long enough to be shorn, it's oimed ligzos, or it's once it's shorn, it's certainly metalteli, it's certainly a portable. So you see, once again, that from our mission, it would seem portables are subject to the ksuba payment. The Gemara says, hochi ka'omar. The winners, we didn't understand the Mishnah the right way, but rather, thusly is the Mishnah to be explained. Afilu ato moichir se'a roshcha v'oichel. In other words, you have to pay the ksuba with all the land property that you have, and if you will be left with nothing to live on, so be it. Even if it's a matter of you're selling the hair of your head for food for you to live on, you are still obligated to pay her the ksuba. The Rashi elaborates. He says, "Hochi gomer b'kiva afilu ein l'choma lechol elim kein timkor se'a roshcha." Even if you are in a position, you have nothing to eat other than through the sale of the hair of your head. Zokugato litein lo kol hakarka she'eshlecha. You are never still obligated to give her all the land that you have, as per the example above. The Gemara asks another question based on assumed prior knowledge. First, we'll read the question. Shamas mina ein mesavrin lebalchov. Should we conclude from here a conclusion or a principle that is actually not true in other contexts? Let us give a little background. If a person in the time of the Beis Hamikdash donated his Torah value to the Beis Hamikdash. It's called, he donated his erech to the Beis HaMikdash. That is, how much is he obligated to give? So that's spelled out in the Torah. Let us say that the person who vowed to pay his erech doesn't have enough money. So we come to terms with the fellow, and we tell him, pay whatever you can afford, and that does not involve his need to sell off his basic necessities for day-to-day living. What we just described is misadrin lebalchov, where we come to terms with the creditor. In this Mishnah, it seems that we don't care about the husband's situation. He has a debt, and he has to pay it off, even if he has to sell the hair off his head in order to eat. So the Gemara's question is, Shamis Mino, should we conclude from here that Ein Misadrin Lebal Chov, that we don't help the debtor in meeting his debt, i.e., that we don't enable him to keep basic necessities? Omar Rav Nachman Rabbi Yitzchak. So the Gemara continues at the top of Samach Vov. Lomar She'ein Mekarin Shtar Ksuba. Our Mishnah that teaches that you'll have to sell the hair off your head in order to eat is telling us that we don't tear up the Shtar Ksuba. Now the Rosh explains, Lomar She'ein Mekarin Shtar Ksuba Klomar Li'oilam Misajin Balchov. In general, when you have a person that owes money and he doesn't have the means of paying off the debt, we do come to terms with him. And it's thusly that we say to this husband, you have to pay your wife's ksuba from all property that comes your way. Even if it's a function of selling the hair off your head for your food needs, bishvil zeh, just because of this, lo tiftar miksubasa, you are not going to be free from the ksuba obligation. V'komashmalan, and we're telling the afalgadin in sivi afina balchov michom michom erechin, even though with regard to the idea of sidur balchov, we learn this concept from a gezerah shava. The word micha is based on the word moch of the Torah, a person becoming impoverished and hence unable to pay his erech debt. V'asim sifim mochu me'erkecho v'darshinon hachiyo me'erkecho shemrichon lo kidei chayav liftor mikol chovo b'ashe biyodo maseges atal litein. In the parsha of Erechin, this Torah dedication that we made allusion to before, there we say, we come to terms, we meet him halfway, so to speak, and we enable him to keep for himself things that he needs for his basic needs. And as the Gemara there says, and the Rosh cites that Gemara, he says, "Kemo berchan disnan, nosan selav eshir, ein noisin lo." If a person who had been poor paid what he could have afforded at that time, and then subsequently becomes rich, he doesn't have to pay anymore. So the whole milsali afin American elachayev lefra kishetasig yodo litain. This case, the case of ksuba debt, is different than erechin in this respect. Namely, whereas in erechin, if you paid whatever you could afford at the time, and then later became rich, you don't have to pay the balance that that a man who had the means would have had to pay initially. However, in this case, with the regard to the woman's ksuba, you might not have the money now. You pay her what you can afford, and you remain in debt to her. As the Gemara said, we learn from it, we don't tear up the shtar ksuba. We don't tear up her claim. Just because you gave her whatever you could afford right now, the debt continues, and you have to pay. Whenever you get more funds, you'll have to pay that to her. But as far as the idea of leaving basic necessities for someone that owes money, that we will do here in this case also, leaving the husband with the basic life-supporting necessities. For example, we leave him with a bed and other articles that are spelled out in the Mishnah in Maseches Erechin. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.